Hi.
Yes.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm a very special guest today. We have hundreds missing. Maui confronts a challenge. Does anyone have any doubt where they are? They've been incinerated. They've been turned into ash. Here we get this kind of story from the AP. 2 weeks after the deadliest U.S. wildfire falls, in more than a century, swept through the Maui community, authorities say anywhere between 500 and 1,000 people remain unaccounted for, a staggering number for officials facing huge challenges to determine how many of those perished and how many of them may have made it to safety but haven't checked in. Well, they weren't allowing anyone to make it to safety. I mean, this is just outrageous. Remember, the indicators that this was completely deliberate and that everyone was in on it except the poor residents and their children. There was no siren set off. That's excused on the absurd pretext that people would have run into the fire. How idiotic is that? No water was provided. The guy who runs the water says, before we can distribute water, we have to talk about equity. How absurd is that? We had vehicles stopped by the police where a bystander asked him, what are you doing? The fire's coming. He said, I'm under orders to keep them there. We had the children sent home that day. I had a caller yesterday on my RBN show, one of the final callers who made a stunning point that they had to have the kids there because the kids would be the heirs to the property. They'd be the legitimate property owners. So we want to wipe them all out. And of course, there was a selective character of the effects. For example, well, you go along the beach, Ron, and you look at the video of it. You see one house after another reduced to ash, white powdery ash, just as we had in Paradise, California. Clear evidence of the use of directed energy. Then all of a sudden, you got this magnificent estate sitting there. You go a little further, more destroyed houses. Then you have this huge hotel sitting there. What's the deal? Well, that wonderful estate just happened to belong to the governor. This is just like Oprah. Oprah's estate, and she just bought like 800 more acres in Maui. Not singed, not a bit. Clearly, we have a situation here that was deliberately contrived. So when they acknowledge that hundreds are missing, I guarantee you, they're not just missing, they're dead. They were turned to ash. Get this, too. Maui mayor tries to shut down press conference after man asks how many children are missing. Sounds like a pretty straightforward, innocuous question. The mayor of Maui threatened in a press conference when asked how many children made up the total death toll of the devastated Lahaina wildfire. And believe me, it's going to be well over 1,000. Well over 1,000. My best guess at this point, around 1,200. In viral footage circulating on social media, Mayor Richard Bisson angered residents and members of the press when he claimed he could provide no estimate for the number of children who could have perished in a fire. Well, they know how many kids are in the school. They know they were sent home from school. He should have a very exact number right at his fingertips. Thus, we're getting tweets. I meme, therefore I am. After 10 days of devastating fire in Maui, the mayor, Richard Bisson, couldn't give an answer to how many kids are missing. Honestly, what's going on in Maui? Why is there no answer or accountability? I don't know. I wish I knew the answer, Bisson told a man who asked about the number of missing children. Yes, you do, the man told Bisson, going on to repeat his request. How many children are missing? Again, Bisson said he could not provide an answer. You have no estimate as to how many children are missing, another person asked. This time, Bisson responded, I guess we can end this right now, prompting a slew of backlash from residents and the media in attendance. This is completely disgusting. Completely disgusting. Hawaiian Governor Josh Green, whose estate, as I observed, was skipped over. Why? Because it wasn't on the list. Foreign Reporter Sunday, it's possible there'll be many children among the more than 1,000 individuals who remain unaccounted for. And honestly, I hadn't figured out why in the world they would have wanted to have those kids home to be taken out until the comment came from a caller to the RBN show. Meanwhile, livid Maui resident flipped off Biden's motorcade. I mean, I am telling you, people are pissed. F you, livid Maui residents. A video shared Monday showed furious Maui residents screaming obscenities at President Joe Biden's motorcade. And by the way, it was 20 to 30 vehicles. 20 to 30 vehicles. This is a guy who cares about climate change, and he's got 20 to 30 vehicles in his motorcade at Maui. A series of wildfires, sick, meaning that's, of course, wrong, across Hawaii, but mainly on Maui, have claimed the lives of at least 115 people, while at least 850 are still missing weeks after the blazes began, according to Hawaii News Now. Biden, who spent the tragedy and immediate aftermath relaxing on the beach and saying no comment, finally bothered to show up for his voters on Monday, but his visit has been messed with nothing but disgust from seemingly everyone. A video shared on YouTube on Monday showed Maui residents raising their middle fingers at his motorcade as it drove through the island. Here it comes after 13 days, someone said in the background with evident frustration. Wow. He's finally here. Wow. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for nothing. F you, F you, F you, another man said, growing progressively and understandably more angry. Countless others screamed F you as the president drove past, while there were signs that read FJB for F Joe Biden. Biden was even repulsive enough to try to make a joke about the natural disaster. He actually compared the unimaginable agony of thousands of Maui residents to a time lightning hit his home, causing zero injuries and not much damage. So while some may think these residents are childish for their antics, I don't. No one could possibly be more childish than Biden and the abusive relationship his presidency has become for the American people. I think that's got it right. Absolutely got it right. Well, guess what? Is it a surprise that there is a directed energy facility within 40 miles of the town? I don't find that surprising in the least. Not only that, but get this. FEMA turns Hawaii tragedy into a tropical retreat, stays at a $1,000 a night luxury hotel, leaving taxpayers footing a bill. Now, mind you, FEMA is a subsidiary of the Department of Homeland Security. I am convinced FEMA was responsible for the catastrophe using laser-mounted or microwave-mounted satellite weaponry to bring about the destruction. In my judgment, there's no way around it. The evidence is decisive. While most government officials, not corrupt, would see a trip to Hawaii as an opportunity to address a recent tragedy near Lahaina, it seemed FEMA officials saw it as an opportunity for something quite different. According to a report and photographs obtained by the Daily Mail, which, by the way, is really quite a good news source, far superior to, for example, the New York Times. While the people of Hawaii grapple with a serious disaster, FEMA officials have been enjoying all the amenities that come with a $1,000 a night hotel. The revelation has sparked outrage, with many seeing this as a blatant display of disregard for the dire situation at hand. There, just rubbing our faces in it, the news outlet reported. FEMA teams have checked in at three five-star hotels, the Fairmont Kealani, the Four Seasons, and the Grand Wailea Astoria, where past guests include members of Hollywood's elite. Their rooms carry price tags that are well out of reach of most hardworking Americans. Federal government rates for this week at all three resorts started an eye-watering $1,000, company sources told the Daily Mail. The news comes in stark contrast to pleas from FEMA's administrator, Deanne Criswell, who has been vocal about the agency's lack of funds. Criswell has repeatedly stated FEMA needs more taxpayer money to adequately respond to disasters like the ones in Hawaii. Right. They need more money for the five-star hotels. Criswell said during an interview with Face the Nation, our estimates do still say that we may have a depletion of our funds. Now it's pushed into the middle of September. And as we get closer to that, I mean, this is a day-by-day monitoring of the situation. CBS News reported, FEMA's disaster fund could dry up within weeks and delay the federal response to natural disasters. The federal response might as well be funeral to natural disasters, the agency's administrator warned Sunday. FEMA Director Deanna Criswell told Face the Nation the agency is watching the disaster relief fund very closely ahead of hurricane season, and that some recovery projects that are not life-saving could be delayed into the next fiscal year if funding falls short. Good idea. Let it fall short. DHS and FEMA are scum. They're destroying the nation, and they're doing it deliberately. How many times have I reported FEMA has run the fake shootings all over the country, including Sandy Hook? All over the country. Including Sandy Hook, where it turns out it wasn't even an elementary school. It was a special needs school. while the experts, the 13 experts I brought together, including six PhDs, and I concluded the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students or teachers there, and it had been a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. It turns out I learned during the past year, during communication with members who actually participated in the hoax, that Eric Holder had come down to Newtown in 2006, that the school had actually been closed then. And if you have any doubt, just look at aerial photographs and you'll see this is supposed to be an elementary school, but there isn't even a playground. When have you heard of an elementary school that didn't have a playground? I mean, it's ridiculous. The Babylon Bee, so precise, so penetrating with its satire, which, of course, is successful because it's rooted in truth. Get this. Biden tells fire victims he sympathized because one time he walked on the beach without sandals and the sand was really hot. President Joe Biden arrived in Maui this week full of quips and folksy anecdotes to show his support for the victims of the deadly fires, pulling out some of his best material to comfort those who lost everything. I know just what you guys are going through, the president told a group of Luhansk residents gathered to hear him speak. When a few years ago, a decade or so ago, I was walking on the beach in Delaware. And if you've ever been to the beach, you know how hot that sand gets in the sun. Let me tell you, I walked all the way across the beach without sandals on, and my feet felt like they were burning hotter than one of Hunter's little girlfriends in a church on Sunday, if you know what I mean. Pause for laughter. Meaning, of course, he's reading his script. Bahania residents reacted to the president's story with mixed emotions. Some believing the president was just trying to relate to their entire city being burned to ashes, and others wondering if he knew where he was. Hot beach sand, Palo Kioa, Asri borders. I'm not sure how that's supposed to make me feel better after my entire house and everything I owned was incinerated. Democrat Leslie McCanny said she appreciated the president's remarks. They just go to show what a man of the people he is, how not at all detached from reality he is, and how much he knows or he is at all times. Oh, look, he's bowing his head and closing his eyes in humble reverence for the devastation on our island. The president continued to regale islanders with more totally relatable stories, like the time he burned a Totini pizza in the oven and his house smelled like burned pepperoni and fake cheese for over an hour. I mean, really, that gets it pretty damn close. By the way, I mentioned last time how Miles Mathis has sought to debunk the use of dues here. I will include links to where he talks about that. He's attacked Judy Wood and me for explaining what happened in New York City to the Twin Towers, which he, of course, could not possibly do, unless, of course, he simply buys into the idea of having nanothermite or a collapse that took place using conventional explosive. Or maybe he's going to tell us it was the planes that did it, even though it's physically impossible. But he's gone further. He's gone further because he's even suggested that the JFK assassination was a manufactured event. Now, for those who have done a lot of work on JFK, as have I, you'll understand that he became confused because there were efforts to obfuscate what happened. There were fake photographs. They even had a body double they put in place and took some autopsy photos. Robert Grodin has promoted some of those, but they're not Jack. And the idea of denying that JFK was killed in Dallas on 22 November is just preposterous. But that's what the sort of thing we get from Miles Davis. I'm convinced his role is to create uncertainty about major events to promote the disinformation agenda, which is not to convince you one way or another, but to make everything so cloudy that everything is believable and nothing is knowable. Meanwhile, we have a cause of death purportedly revealed for Obama's family chef at their Martha's Vineyard home. Get this. The death of former U.S. President Barack Obama's personal chef, Tafari Campbell, in the Massachusetts resort community of Martha's Vineyard was an accident, a state official said on Tuesday. Campbell, 45, died while paddleboarding in the waters close to the former president's home in late July. His body was recovered a day later with the aid of sonar technology about 100 feet from the shore and 8 feet underwater in Edgerton's Great Pond, a large coastal pool connected to the Atlantic. Well, if you believe this, I got a bridge I want to sell you because it's a crock. This is complete nonsense. We have 5 or 6 tells regarding Tafari Campbell's death. Just we have 5 or 6 tells regarding the fires in Maui. They include that a party called in on Sunday claiming that it had seen a paddleboarder fall into the water and not resurface. And the call appears to have been made from the Obama estate by a woman, otherwise unnamed. Well, I'm convinced this was actually by Michelle Obama. They left blank where they normally would fill in the party and the location and shifted it down to the dock, which was all wrong. Then we learned further there was supposed to be a second paddleboarder who was along with him, also unnamed. Later, and I think this is deliberately obscure, the real identity of the party, they said it was a woman, but he was unable to save him. They're claiming he was found in 8 feet of water. Well, we know now, 100 feet from the shore, the water is only 3 feet deep. The guy could not pop. Well, you can drown in a glass of water, theoretically, but this guy could have saved himself by just standing up. Then we had the loss of the blood sample from Tafari Campbell. Now, that to me is a major tell, along with the fact that the following day, Barack Obama goes out golfing, trying to appear as just engaging in normal activities, and got bandages on cuts on his left hand, and he's got a black eye. Now, what this suggests to me is that they had to destroy the blood sample because it included traces of amyl nitrate or other drugs gays used to enhance their sexual relations. Your aspects of this remind me of what happened with Paul Pelosi and his friend David, where Paul actually went into the hospital with a skull fracture and cuts on his left hand, which occurred when he tried to break out the glass at the back of the house to make it look as though there'd been a break-in when there had been none, and where the skull fracture appears to have been caused by being hit over the head by a hammer-shaped dildo. It's pink. You can buy it on Amazon.com for $95, loaded with batteries. It would make a substantial weapon. Where Pelosi and his gay boyfriend had apparently got into an argument, and David, his name, hit him over the head with the dildo. Well, I think something similar happened here with Barack Obama and Tafari, and the blood sample is most important here, that they got into an argument that Tafari defended himself when Obama attacked him, put up a defense, cut his hand, popped him in the eye. They had to get rid of the blood sample. We have ambiguity about where the Obamas were, whether they were at home, not at home. They first... You know, anytime you get that kind of ambiguity or that kind of obscurity about what actually happened, who the parties were, yet ought to be viewed as red flags to raise your suspicions. So this appears to me to be a total sham. We know all the cover-ups of the past. They've covered up for Hillary, her servers, destroying her hard drives with hammers and bleach bit. I mean, it's just outrageous. Nothing comes of it. 33,000 emails you destroyed, and we don't hear a word about it, not a peep. Donald Trump has documents that are perfectly secure in an approved vault that the National Archives has acknowledged, but he gets raided. We got Joe Biden and all the criminal activities. We have yet to see any effort by the FBI or the Department of Justice to really get into the heart of the matter here. Instead, we know they've covered it up so massively. Anyone who has any doubt that we're actually living in a banana republic needs to think twice, because all the evidence is here. I submit we're even now allowing our leaders not just to get away with all kinds of horrific stuff, but even death. I'm not suggesting this was deliberate as a murder. It appears to have been a manslaughter or possibly second degree. But I personally have no doubt what happened was along these lines. By the way, now, tonight, Donald Trump is getting revenge on Fox because he's not participating in the GOP candidate debates that will be held in Milwaukee, my own state, this evening. Instead, he's going to be doing an interview with Tucker Carlson that will be in competition. And I guarantee you, two out of three viewers will be watching Donald Trump with Tucker. Only one in three will be watching the debate. I expect to be doing a bit of a commentary on another show tonight. But bear in mind, this is happening tonight. Trump had every reason in the world not to participate in the debate. But a special aspect is that it forms a type of revenge on Fox, which not only fired Tucker, but has gone anti-Trump in a big way. Very, very disappointing. I'm delighted to say I have Mike King, who does the anti-New York Times, available with a new book he's just put out in the market. You're not going to want to miss a word of this. We'll be right back.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you. join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, my special guest today, Mike King, is not only the editor of the anti-New York Times, which I highly recommend you read. The New York Times has become such a disgusting propaganda rag that it's a shame. It's embarrassing. It's catastrophic that it is our nation's newspaper of record, which means that what you read in the New York Times purports to be the official history of the United States, but also the real history, chan.com, just C-H-A-N, abbreviation for channel.com, where he publishes a whole lot of rather sensational stuff. He now has a new book, The Song That Never Ends, a comprehensive illustrated refutation of the event that never happened, 234 pages. Mike, I've read it. I like it. Very courageous of you to do this, to make this move, my friend. Welcome to the Raw Deal again.
Yeah, hello, Jim. Well, you read the whole thing already. That was quick. Must have been riveting.
Yeah. Oh, I read it the day you sent it to me. I just sat down and went right to it. Yes, yes. Yeah. Excellent.
Well, thank you. It was long overdue. And I think I did a pretty good comprehensive job with it by linking, putting some historical context around it, which, you know, other hoax debunks haven't done. I mean, I do a whole few chapters on the history of atrocity propaganda and, you know, why it came to be. And that kind of frames the issue. That was very important. But I enjoyed doing this book, The Song That Never Ends. It's available at Real History Chan. com. If you look at the menu, there'll be a page that says The Song.
Well, you know, I myself have published when Nick Kohlerstrom was about to release his Breaking the Spell, which is just masterful, because Nick not only had the benefit of the International Committee of the Red Cross records from every camp, where they kept extensive detailed data on the age, the sex, the race, the ethnicity, the religion, and the cause of death of all of the inmates. And in 1993, did a recalibration and found the total number was 296,081 who had died from all causes of death, none of whom had died from being put to death in a gas chamber. Of the British death books, the British had cracked the German code. The Germans were extremely meticulous. Yeah. So the British had copies of all the records the Germans were keeping on all the camps. So Nick had that available to him in publishing Breaking the Spell. And he invited me to write the introduction, which I was very pleased to do, and have published separately as a standalone piece under the heading The Holocaust Narrative, Politics Trumps Science. I just love the photographs Nick discovered. For example, hundreds of children were born in these camps. If you look at a map of Auschwitz, it turns out they have a hospital with OBYN, GYOBYN facilities. Well, why would you have to have facilities for obstetrics and childbirth if these were centers for extermination? You're not going to have anyone around for 9 months, which still is the amount of time it takes to go through a full-term gestation. even if Democrats want to claim men can have children, what's striking about the German camps is so many of their inmates were having children, hundreds and hundreds. And he's got photographs, and they're nourished well. They look healthy. They look trusting of adults. Mike, I just love what you've done here, and it complements a whole lot of other work that the American people need to understand.
Yes, and I actually quote, and I provide images from a story in the Jewish Daily Forward. So if anybody wants to say, well, these are just right-wing sources. No, there's a story. 3,000 babies were born at Auschwitz alone. And the Forward describes them as, you know, miracle babies. Okay, one or two, maybe a miracle, but 3,000, obviously that there is a dedicated effort on the part of the Germans to bring these pregnancies to birth and then care for the children. And even as they got older, I mean, for some of the younger children, there were activities in the camps. And there are actually inmates who were, I mean, most of them are dead by now, but they're on film giving their testimony, Jewish women, about how the activities that they would organize for the children. And there was a Jewish women's orchestra in Auschwitz. So there are all kinds of activities. It was more like living on a college campus than a Soviet gulag.
Well, of course, these were labor camps. I mean, it wasn't all fun and games, but
no, they worked. They had to work. Yes.
Right. But the point is, these were not centers for extermination. And the story of 6 million. I mean, the amount of time and energy it takes to burn a body, I think if there had been 6 million, it would have taken 30 years to burn all those bodies. I mean, Mike, it's just outrageous what Americans don't think about these things. They don't try to reason through and unfortunately allow themselves to be played. And the propaganda operation supporting the Holocaust is just astonishing, virtually mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. I mean, who is it that said most men would rather die than think? I forget the famous personage who made that observation. But yeah, it is quite remarkable, Jim, because figuring out a lot of this stuff really doesn't require all that much research and all that much deep thought. I mean, yeah, if you're going to get into the nitty gritty, like the documents that you mentioned being dug up, that's one thing. But I'm just talking on a superficial level. For example, I make the point in my book that, you know, our cat tragically passed away a few years ago. And my wife wanted to have her cremated and keep the ashes. The process took like 3 hours. This for an 8-pound cat. Okay. And while it's going on, I mean, my mind is always thinking in one way or another. I'm trying to imagine how they're able to pass off 6 million being cremated when it takes 3 hours just to cremate one cat. And if you look at the crematorium in Auschwitz, I mean, they're the size of pizza ovens, and there's only a handful of them. The absurdity of the thing is just so mind-boggling that it can almost repulse somebody when you present it to them, because it's almost like it's too obvious, you know, they just can't grasp it. But yeah, to the issue of the cremation, I mean, among many other facts, that is one of the most preposterous.
It is. It is indeed. And of course, the very number 6 million, as I observe, and you do as well, there were a vast number of historical reference to 6 million Jews long before the Nuremberg tribunals, in fact, beginning as early as 1890, where it appears to have a theological foundation in a disputed passage of Leviticus, interpreted to mean that the chosen people can return to the promised land only when 6 million have been consumed in the flames, except in the original Hebrew, there wasn't a word for 6 million, so even that's an interpolation. But you go back as long ago as 1890, And there are all these statements. A number repeats itself again and again. 236 references to 6 million Jews in dire straits or fear of loss of their lives in the international press prior to the Nuremberg Tribunal. I mean, that's just so revealing, Mike.
Yeah, there's no question that there's some sort of maybe occult significance to that number. It definitely has some kind of meaning. I mean, they used it with the famine in Russia, and then they used it with the Russian Civil War, and they used it in the aftermath of World War One. They used, I mean, it was like you said, it was consistently, and this is documented in newspapers. I didn't know there were 200 and some odd references. Personally, I only had found like 40, but it doesn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if there were 1,000 references, but there's no question that 6 million means something. The only element of truth that it might pertain to could be the number of German civilians who were slaughtered after World War II. Maybe I can buy 6 million Germans mass murdered, and there's your Holocaust right there.
Mike, I doubt very much there were even 6 million Jews in all of Europe at the time. I mean,
no, there
it,
weren't.
Just re-
there weren't.
Yeah.
And we know from official sources post-World War II that there were several million who became DPs, classified as DPs, displaced persons, all through Western Europe. And we also know that there were millions who went back home to their Eastern European countries of origin. There were 1.5 million who settled in Israel by 1949. And then there were maybe 500,000 or 1 million came to the United States. So I mean, you add those numbers up. So when people say, oh, where'd they all go? Well, you know, there it is. They were either scattered throughout Europe in DP camps, or they went back home, or they went to Israel, or they came to the United States. You add those numbers up, and it's about the equivalent of the Jews that we know lived in Europe. So, so not only were there not even 6 million Jews in Europe, but then when you add up these numbers that I just talked about, it's even more ridiculous. So, yeah, clearly the Red Cross numbers are accurate. And you will find that not once, and neither in internal documents or public pronouncements, I am not aware of a single time where anyone from the Red Cross at that time complained that the Germans were not forthcoming or transparent. It was just high marks given to the Germans for their transparency. So I absolutely believe that figure of 270,000. And by the way, it wasn't just Jews in these camps. They put communists in there too. So you might have to cut that number in half.
Right.
Yeah. And then you have to account for old age and natural attrition as well, because you know you have several million people in captivity, so you have to weed that out, and then you get to some of the typhus epidemic outbreaks, and there you go. That's the realistic assessment of the so-called genocide.
Oh, Mike, that's exactly right. 296,081 total, but that they were not all Jews. There were gypsies. There were whole lot of others about whom the Third Reich was not happy that were in these labor camps. And, you know, when they talk about Zyklon B, it's a mild form of cyanide they were using to kill body lice on the inmates. The body lice are spreading typhus and dysentery. They wanted to preserve the health of the inmates for the obvious reason. You can't get work out of a corpse. So they just took the Zyklon B and made it sound as though that had been the gas they'd used to kill these vast numbers, which would have been a hard sell under any circumstance. Just ridiculous. Plus, we know that Fred Lochter went to Europe and visited all the camps for the trial in Canada. The heroic Holocaust denier, Ernst Zundel, and during his second trial in 1988, released his report that there were no facilities at any of the camps that could have functioned as gas chambers. The whole story was nothing but a crock.
Yeah. it's really absurd. You know, the Zycon B is just bug spray. And, you know, when you think about it, Jim, I mean, the Germans, just as a national characteristic, are known for their efficiency and being meticulous, and especially the military, and especially the SS. So if they had wanted to exterminate people who were already in their captivity and under their control, would have been a very simple matter to do so, and there would have been much more efficient means of doing so than herding people through a small door in a gas chamber, and then you have to pull them out one by one. I guess one guy gets the hand, one guy gets the feet, and you're going to have a hazmat suit on, you know? you just try to envision this thing, especially when you see an image of what purports to be the bombed out gas chamber in ruins. I mean, if you reassemble the thing, it's no bigger than a three-car garage, okay? I mean, the thing just falls apart on so many levels, even without getting into the science. And these people, these researchers and the Fred Luchter, they've done some great work. But even if you're just too lazy and you don't have a technical bent to look into that, just to look at some of these matters, that, I mean, the sheer numbers. I have an illustration in my book of 13 NFL football stadiums packed to the rafters, all over time herded into these small gas chambers. And I put a little tiny image of the gas chamber next to the giant football stadium. And that just makes a visual of how ridiculous this is. And it's so bad, there's no way to counter it other than passing laws against it, as exist in 17 different countries, which alone tells you that it's true, or that the event is false, and that what we're saying is true.
And, of course, as we find with other forms of propaganda, such as that January 6th was an insurrection, or that Joe Biden actually won the 2020 election, they're ferocious in going after and attacking anyone who questions. I mean, in Germany, yeah, you can actually be imprisoned for denying the Holocaust. I have featured Monica Schaefer, whose brother may still be in prison for denying the Holocaust. I mean, it's just outrageous what goes on here. But that is the nature of the beast. When you're trying to promote a big lie that will not withstand critical scrutiny, you got to go after hammer and tongs against anyone who wants to apply critical reasoning to sort things out and expose the sham.
Yeah. And the thing about the Holocaust is, unlike some of the other propaganda barrages that the public was hit with over the years, which I review in my book surrounding World War One, for example, when there were reports in all the respectable news sources that the Germans were taking babies in Belgium and just throwing them up in the air, catching them with their bayonets, raping and crucifying women. I mean, it was really bad. But with the passage of time, that, you know, everyone came to understand that that was war propaganda. And nobody disputes that now, even establishment historians. But what's different about the Holocaust, it's because it has so many important contemporary applications, they need to keep it alive, you see. Because even though it happened so long ago, if you debunk it, it really affects the whole foundation for the whole state of Israel exists today. Okay. I mean, they get their aid and they get their sympathy still on the basis of this event that never happened. So I have to keep that in place. In addition to that, World War II, I always say, is the foundational mythology which defines the modern world. The entire so-called liberal new world order of today is based on that event. So if you debunk the Holocaust, that opens up the door to telling the real story of World War II in general, and which automatically you remove the foundation of the modern world. You see what I'm saying? So it has contemporary, very important for the globalists and the Zionists to keep this lie alive for contemporary purposes.
Mike, I couldn't agree more. Jewish Israeli Zionist political power is rooted in a Western sense of guilt over the Holocaust. So if this didn't actually occur, they worry they're going to lose their ability to influence events. It's all a monster fraud driven by political motives, including, of course, the founding of the State of Israel, which now it appears aspires to move to Ukraine. Most of the occupants of Israel today, DNA studies have shown, are not descendants of the tribe of Judah, but rather Khazars or Khazarians, where the state of Khazarians, modern-day Ukraine, they want to return and make it the new Israel. But they want it all, Mike. They want it all. Yeah. They don't want Russia to have Crimea. They don't want Russia to have Donbass. They want Russia to have Odessa. Russia, however, is not going to surrender any of that territory. Mark my words. Thus, we're at an impasse between an immovable object and an irresistible force. And this, I think, is why Western states like the United States, where our Congress is Israeli-occupied territory, sends endless billions and all kinds of military aid to Ukraine, not with no concern for the well-being of the American people, or the boundaries of Ukraine mean more to the Biden admin than the boundaries of the United States, which they have freely opened to flood the nation with millions of migrants. It is stunning.
Yeah, it sure is. But they may have met the match in the form of Vladimir Putin and the new resurgent Russian nation that has drawn a line in the sand. And you know, like you said, those areas are not going back, and Ukraine is not going to join NATO. But again, we talk about those contemporary applications. This is why they hate Putin so much, because, you know, Russia, which was on its knees 20 years ago, is now become a bulwark against the New World Order. So all this ties together. I mean, anything that undermines the New World Order primarily, and also secondarily Greater Israel, anything that stands in the way of that has got to be attacked, you see. So that's why they come after Holocaust deniers. That's why they hate Putin. It's all, you know, related. Everything emanates from the global power structure. But this still remains one of their big lies, Jim. And if it ever falls apart, and it is beginning to fray, not just because of some of the research that's come out, but primarily, I believe, because the passage of time and the death of most of these so-called survivors, this is going to become harder and harder to manipulate people with. And that's a good thing, because once you, if you can move around the Holocaust, then the next, that's the first barrier. Once that falls, the next logical step is to have a look at World War II in general. And then you really begin to understand the modern world, which is why my book, The Bad War, which was my all-time bestseller on Amazon, was banned, removed from Amazon in 2018, because I debunked that event, which is the bigger picture. But that's also available at realhistorychan.com. So, but, you know, this is the reason why I still write a lot about World War II and the Holocaust, just because I'm interested in history, but again, it still has contemporary applications. It's like a math equation, Jim, that you got wrong, and you go back to the original sub-equation that you derived from the word problem, and you find out, oh, I missed a decimal point. You have to correct it, and then you can get to the right answer. So we've got to go back and correct that original error, which was our perception of this grand historical event, World War II, and even World War I before that was a big scam.
Mike, I want to go through the titles of the chapters of your book to give our audience an understanding of the breadth of what you have published here. Chapter 1, Interview with a Holocaust Denier. Chapter 2, The Moral Law of Warfare. Chapter 3, Case Studies in Atrocity Propaganda. Subparts, The Spanish-American War, World War I, The Gulf War, Syria. Chapter 4, 1914, the Manifesto of the 93, Chapter 5. Why did the Germans turn against the Jews? Chapter 6. Prior historical lies about 6 million Jews. Chapter 7. Something most Americans today do not know. 1933. Jews of the world declare war on Germany. Chapter 8. Jews use the term Holocaust years before the war. Chapter 9. 1938. The myths of Kristallnacht. Chapter 10. 1938. Time Meg, peacetime atrocity propaganda. Chapter 11, Hollywood pre-war propaganda war on Hitler. Chapter 12, the communist Jewish terrorists of Poland. Chapter 13, the internment of Jews and the final solution. Chapter 14, the Auschwitz baby boom. Chapter 15, Jewish scholar inadvertently debunks Hola hoax. Chapter 16, miracles in the gas chambers. Chapter 17, the myth of Dr. Mengele. Chapter 18, Hola hoax trickery, work camps versus death camps. Chapter 19, U.S. site, propaganda ops run by Jewish agents. Chapter 20, the diary of Anne Frank. Chapter 21, 1943, New York Times publishes anti-German hate. Chapter 22, Hola hoax comedy writing. Chapter 23, Jewish deep state ran Nuremberg trials. Chapter 24, the Holocaust of the bullets. Chapter 25, Angie does Auschwitz. Chapter 26, Eli the weasel, 1928 to 2016. 27, Hola hoax survivors seem well fed. Chapter 28, 1945, Soviets and New York Times read Auschwitz lied. Chapter 26, Amazon removes Holocaust debunked books. Chapter 30, presumptive propaganda props up the Holocaust. More when we return from this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Four chapters to go, 31, the Hula Hoax extortion racket. Chapter 32, Hula Hoax child abusers now target 9-year-olds. Chapter 33, was Hitler really a monster? Chapter 34, Germans off your knees. Very broad, very comprehensive, Mike. And of course, one of my books entitled, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, was banned by Amazon when the ADL asked them to remove any books that disputed the official narrative of World War II. And, you know, Amazon obligingly got rid of somewhere between 200 and perhaps 2,000, including mine, where I had a photograph on the back from Nick's book of the British soccer team at Auschwitz. Just looking at that photographs, these guys are so fit. They're looking so healthy, so joyful. It's just a mind bender, stunning to realize that we have been played for so long in so many ways about this specific aspect of World War II.
Well, that's all they can do is outlaw and ban. I mean, actually, my book, The Bad War, was among the first 25 to go when Amazon first started removing books, because up until that time, I think this was 2017, they had refused repeatedly demands from the ADL to remove Holocaust denial books. And they just ignored them all. Amazon refused to do it. And then there was that rash of phony terrorists. They weren't terrorist attacks. They were phone calls coming from Israel, we now know, to Jewish community centers across the country, calling in bomb threats. And that created a big stink. And then right in the shadow of Amazon headquarters in Seattle, a Jewish cemetery and later on a Jewish synagogue were vandalized. And that just proved too much bad PR for Amazon, because with every incident, they kept screaming louder and louder, oh, you got to take off these books, as if the books are causing the fake vandalism, you know? So finally, Amazon did capitulate. 25 books on the Holocaust were removed. Even mine, which only dealt on a few pages on the Holocaust, actually, but they removed the bad war. And once that precedent was set, it later expanded, and now you said, what, a couple thousand books?
Maybe, as many.
Yeah. But I was among the freshman class. I was among the first class of honorees, I guess you could call it. But it was a tough blow to me personally, because that my book, The Bad Boy, was really blowing up on Amazon. And the way they had their algorithm set is once you generate enough initial sales on your own, they would begin promoting the book for you. So a lot of newbies were stumbling across The Bad War and also the other Holohoax books. And that's what scared them. It was the power of the Amazon search engine was causing too many people to stumble across this stuff for the first time. So they banned it all.
Well, they're masters at making up phony events to promote a political agenda. If you need a synagogue to be vandalized because you want to go against alleged anti-Semitic activity, you do it. Almost all of these events, including cemeteries knocking over Jewish gravestones, are done by the ADL. I mean, it's just outrageous, Mike, that when they control the mainstream, they've really got a lock on what most Americans know and understand, because most Americans are too naive and credulous. They're willing to believe whatever they read or whatever they see. I think that's one of the great benefits of Donald Trump calling out the fake news media. So I think there's a very significant, maybe I'd say a third of the population, that no longer takes for granted what the mainstream is promoting. And there's maybe another third that's just not paying attention. And then there's another third of the gullible saps. That's pretty close, by the way, to what I take to have been the actual outcome of voting in 2020, where Trump may have had as many as 100 million honest-to-God cast votes, and Biden only 37. That's around the right proportion, I think. But there's a whole lot of people who just don't vote at all and really aren't politically active.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Jim. That is perhaps the greatest achievement of the Trump's first presidency, was the extent to which he damaged the reputation of the news. And it's interesting. I just did a piece on my site on Joseph Goebbels, who was the Minister of Public Enlightenment and Propaganda in Germany. And propaganda is really a neutral term. It doesn't really have to have a negative stink to it. It's just a word for advertising or propagating an idea in a simple way. But he was the Minister of Public Enlightenment and Propaganda, and he wrote a piece talking about this very subject of how, before they came to power, how they were able to confront the Jewish Bolshevik media that controlled Germany at that day. And he says, you can't start rebutting their arguments, because they'll just throw 100 more at you. Okay. He says, instead, our mantra was, they lie, exclamation point. And that's really the way you have to do it. I mean, what is the point, Jim, of going point by point when you know someone is a con artist or a liar? You know, you'll just go around in circles all day, and it'll just attack from another angle. You got to go directly at them. And that's what Trump's frontal attacks achieved. A lot of people no longer believe the media. Unfortunately, there's still much work to be done, but I'll tell you, they're not what they were 20 years ago. That's for sure. Even 10 years ago when, I remember back in the day, all you had was ABC, CBS, and NBC, and they just, you know, laid down the gospel that came from the New York Times that very morning, and that's what everybody had to accept. And even if you doubted it, you had nowhere else to turn to get the truth, you know, until the internet came along and really put us back in the game. But that's how you have to deal with these people. Is not to say I beg to differ and here's why. No, go to the root and say, you're a damn liar. And it's very effective, and they fear that.
Mike, some of your chapters I think are especially outstanding, like 7, 1933, Jews of the World Declare War on Germany. Why don't you expand on that event? I think the world has largely lost awareness that it was the Jews who declared war on Germany before Germany had was doing anything about the Jews.
Well, that's right. I mean, not a single hair on the single head of any Jew had been touched, and they had declared war and spread all this ridiculous atrocity propaganda, which even skeptical newspapers of the day doubted at the time. You know, none of that stuff. Nobody was being bothered in the 1930s. But the leaders of all the Jewish groups internationally declared war for the simple reason that Hitler was taking Germany back and putting it under control of the Germans. That was his intention. They knew he was the newspapers, the banking institution, academia, the Jewish influence was greatly diminished or broken. Okay, so in short, Hitler's agenda was to remove Germany from the New World Order system. And given that that system was controlled by Jewish international bankers and media moguls, that was a rebellion to them. So they declared war and they stirred up, you know, all of world Jewry against Germany. It was like their marching orders. And this, there were headlines right there. I reproduced them in the book. Judea declares war against Germany. That's from the London Express. From the New York Daily News, 40,000 rally against Hitler at Madison Square Garden. And these were all Jews and some other assorted communists. And I mean, he's not even, his seat hasn't even been warm yet. This is early 1933, and they're waging war. And then simultaneous to this, you had things like the Reichstag fire, which was a communist uprising that was supposed to be the beginning of the communist revolution. So, I mean, you know, the fix was in from day one. We have to topple this guy. And they did declare war on Germany, and then they followed through with the boycotts and the atrocity propaganda and then the threats of war. And finally, it culminated, you know, in war. But that was the plan all along. But the aggressors were international Jewry. There's no... I mean, there's no question about that. And this is their own proclamations.
Yes, 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 absolutely right. Absolutely right. Hollywood, once again, seems to play a key role. Of course, Hollywood is run by Jews. Even Jewish commentators, you know, write about Hollywood, acknowledge it openly. You go through all the studios and the owners of... The producers are all Jewish. It was one exception. I think it was United Artists that was created by actors and actresses to be independent of the predominant figures in you know, Warner Brothers, MGM across the board, who exercise such tremendous control of films and their production and their attitudes. And, of course, we've had a continuation with Spielberg and others. We had The Reader, Schindler's List, Sophie's Choice, all of these very emotional appeals to make the Germans out to be extremely nasty guys who only wanted to kill, 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 when it's all really basically perpetrating or promoting a hoax. It's just outrageous. And yet the American people swoon over these films.
Yeah. It's atrocity propaganda. And right from the very beginning, I mean, Hollywood was founded, Jim, by Jews who were being sued by Thomas Edison circa 1920 because they took his technology with the motion pictures, which he had patented, and they weren't paying anything. And then they started showing like the peep shows and early forms of porn and everything. And Edison was incensed by this, but he sued constantly. I mean, every day he was filing a new lawsuit. He was really going after him. And there were even pitched battles in the streets. Edison would send some of his goons into these areas to snatch up these machines. And then these early media moguls, they would ask help from the Jewish mobsters of the day. And that was their muscle. So, I mean, it was really, really intense. So finally, they just packed up and they left New York, New Jersey area, and they went to California across the country, which in those days, it's almost like going to another world. They did that to get away from Edison. Okay. And then they set up their Hollywood. They were, every single one of them was a Jewish mogul. So right from the beginning, it was their baby. And then leading up to World War II, they played their role in this international declaration of war on Germany. Before the war even started, they were already releasing propaganda films, and Three Stooges were doing attack pieces on Hitler, making him, you know, look like a buffoon. And there were movies about the persecution. And this was to soften up the American public, their mentality, create a negative image of Hitler. And then later came, you know, by the time Pearl Harbor came, they're already prepped. So that was an important contribution to World War II, to bringing about World War II, by the Jewish Hollywood moguls working in conjunction with the Jewish newspaper and radio moguls of the day. And I go through this in the book, but more so in The Bad War, about this domination and how slowly it took a decade to prep the American public, you know, for this event. That's how they operate. Just like with 9/11, how many years of anti-Arab atrocity propaganda and fake terrorist attacks had brought the American people to a point that when those towers were detonated, devastated, destroyed, they already had in their mind, well, it must have been those big bad Arabs, you know. So they're very patient, and they played a long game, and it could take up to 10, 15 years of gradual propaganda in Hollywood, in the media, to frame their intended target. And then by the time they have to trigger a war, the people are like already there mentally.
Oh, yeah, it was just absurd on 9/11. They were from the anchor, and this was all basically one stream. They claimed to have a call in from the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, taking responsibility. This is a typical Mossad psyop. And then they showed footage of Palestinians rejoicing as though it were contemporary. I knew immediately this was archival from some previous religion or political event where they were happy. In fact, the Palestinians were just as dumbfounded and slack-jawed as the rest of the world over this taking place. But they had it right there at their fingertips to run it, to convey that all-important first impression of Palestinians did this. When it was a sophisticated operation, no one would have had less motive or ability to conduct than a Palestinian. It was insulting.
It sure was. And, and one of those videos was later determined to be, there was a case where they went into a neighborhood and they gave out free candy to the Arab kids. They said, hey, everybody celebrate. And the kids were jumping up and down. They were getting free candy. And this, so then they showed that as, you know, to demonstrate how, well, even the children are so hateful. They're celebrating 9/11. But, you know, when you're in a traumatized state, and I don't use that word lightly, people were traumatized as this unfolded live on their television screens. You're susceptible to this stuff, and they know that. And they went to work right away. And you know, by the end of the day, the country was ready to go to war against whatever Muslim country. Didn't matter. Afghanistan, Iran, let's get them. That was, but people never learn from history. This just keeps repeating itself.
And, of course, the diary of, you call Anne Crank, you know, I mean, this was a fabrication. It was written in ballpoint pen. I mean, Mike, this is so, you know, shameless. This is so arrogant. I mean, there were no ballpoint pens in World War II. I mean, just give us a break.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Jim, I go maybe even further than that. I wonder if this child existed.
Yeah.
You know, do we know that this child existed? Or did just Otto Frank, you know, an inventor? You know, they're quite capable of anything. There just seemed to be an unusual number of photographs of her, you know. But, I mean, who knows? And then one of my other chapters titled Eli the Weasel, which is a play on words of Eli Weasel. I quote him. He's got a story about in there about Germans in Auschwitz throwing babies into bonfires. It's just beyond insulting, but, you know, don't dare call them out on this stuff. That's anti-Semitic, don't you know?
Yeah, no, I don't think he even had a... He claimed, didn't he, to be a Holocaust survivor, but he didn't even have a tattoo. I mean, I think this guy exploiting the lecture circuit for big bucks by promoting a hoax. I mean, just outrageous.
Yeah, and did you catch in my book, and this is a new discovery for me. I didn't know this, but even now, right, there's a speak. You can go online and go to a Holocaust Speakers Bureau, and you can book one for your organization or your high school.
Yes.
Okay? For a fee, of course. And now they have the children of Holocaust survivors are giving speeches too. Okay? Born after the war, telling about their parents' experiences because so many now have passed away. They've got to move it on to the next generation. So you can even book the adult child of a so-called survivor. It's money, and it's big money out there. So that's another motive to keep it going. All of these people get speaking fees, and the books that are out there, they still get puffed up by the paper of record and they become bestsellers. So this is like there are secondary and even tertiary motives for keeping the lie alive. In addition to the geopolitical importance of it, there's still a lot of money. And if you look at my cover, the whimsical cover there, you have the three violinists on the above the roof of Auschwitz. They're playing, and dollar bills and gold coins are falling from their violins.
Yes, the song that never ends. Yeah. And you offer a reward, $500 reward to the first reader who can cite any original source, documented or forensic evidence to confirm that 6 million or even just six Jews were executed in Z gas chamber during World War II. And as I've already mentioned, Fred Lochner, who, you know, debunked the whole idea by discovering he was like the world's leading expert on gas chambers. There was nothing there at any of the camps that could possibly have functioned as a gas chamber. Nothing there. I mean, it was total fraud.
Yes, and I have a chapter in there about Professor Timothy Ryback, who's considered one of the leading Holocaust scholars. And it's a review of an article that he had published in the Wall Street Journal in 2004. And it's really an amazing piece because in trying to defend the case, he made so many concessions that if you just focus on the concessions alone, it debunks the Holocaust. And this is like considered a leading guy. And he says that it has been confirmed even by the Polish authorities. They took the bait and they redid the test that Lochner did, and they could find no traces of any kind of poison or cyanide in the gas chambers. So he acknowledges this, but then he explains, he says, probably what happened is that the events were so brief that the poison didn't get to penetrate into the stone.
Germar Rudolph, who was working on a PhD in chemistry when he got involved in research, actually went and found that if you use Zyklon B, then it interacted with the walls and it made a distinctive bluish hue. And you found that in the delousing chambers. But in the so-called gas chambers, there was no residue whatsoever indicating that Zyklon B had never been used in any of what they were purporting to be gas chambers, where Fred Lochner already showed that they were not airtight. They had all kinds of drains. There was no way they could possibly have served the intended purpose being proclaimed by the propagandists.
Yep. No, that's right. And Timothy Ryback, Jewish scholar, confirms no forensic evidence of the gas chambers. He also, in that same article, confirms he has to make this concession. It's called a yeah, but you make the concession and then you twist it. He also concedes that there is a, quote, dearth. That's his word. That's a strong word, dearth, a complete lack of documented evidence. Okay, so this is coming from one of the high priests of Holocaust Christianity. He's saying, yes, there's no forensic evidence. Yes, there's no documented evidence. However, we still know that it happened. This doesn't mean that it's a deep whatever. So yep. That just shows how ridiculous they've gotten, and hence my reward, which nobody will ever take me up on, because there is no forensic evidence and no documented evidence of any gas chambers.
But there's not even any documented evidence that Hitler wanted to exterminate the Jews. He did not want them in government. I think he would be happy for them to be relocated elsewhere than in Germany. But that's true of over 100 other nations who have run the Jews out of their countries because they were up to so much mischief in destroying the integrity of their governments. Michael, the history here is astonishing if you'll simply take a look at the true history as you go after the realhistorychan.com. I mean, the real history is so different than what we are being told and what we're being taught.
Well, my motto is fake history is the fake news that has passed into the rearview mirror. And that's all that is. Today's New York Times is tomorrow's history. So the two go hand in hand. So if news is fake, then automatically history is fake. So we've got to go back and fix the math equation at its earliest point. So that's where the error was made.
We're going to be opening the lines to callers 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Here's an opportunity to speak with Mike King, who's just doing brilliant work, a true iconoclast, through the anti-New York Times and realhistorychan.com. Take advantage. We'll be right back.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Ah.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We have a stunning news release that the head of the Wagner Group, which has been so brilliant in conducting war in Ukraine, also going down to Niger and all that, appears to have been on a plane that has crashed in Russia, killing all 10 on board. The Wagner boss, Evgeny Prigozhin, I mean, this is very, very disturbing. He led a failed mutiny against the Russian armed forces. Strictly speaking, it wasn't a mutiny because they weren't part of the Russian armed forces. But he has been a thorn in the side of Vladimir Putin, no doubt. There's going to be a lot of suspicion that this was not an accident. In any case, we have a couple of callers already standing by. We got Brian, first of all. Brian, go ahead. Join the conversation with Mike King.
Yeah, Mike, just so you know, I bought your book back, 2018, whatever. I think I got it on Amazon before it was banned. And I have a good friend that has a 15-year-old son that's like a super genius. So when I was done, I gave it to him. And he just became such a supporter of Hitler. He would debate people online. He started, he started researching, and this kid is super high IQ. No one could debate him. He had all the information, and your book was part of that. And what I like to point out whenever people get on Hitler is Emil Maurice, Hitler's private bodyguard and chauffeur in the early days, was Jewish. And he was a Jewish watchmaker. And if Hitler was so anti-Semitic, why would he have a Jew as his bodyguard? You know, if his family went to the gas chambers and died, would he come in with his gun one day and shoot Hitler? And then on top of that, he dated Gelly Rabal, Hitler's niece. You can find a picture online that Gelly is writing kind of a loving note to Emil Maurice on the picture. Okay, it's one of the pictures, images of Gelly Rabal, and there it is right there. And the fact that Warburgs owned Auschwitz. They were originally the Zivi, DeBanco, Palin, Zuela family that were bankers in Italy, and then they moved to Warburg, Germany, and changed their name to Warburg. And, you know, if all these Jews were dying in Auschwitz, why did they just go to Warburg and say, oh, it's so terrible, everybody's going up the chimneys. They're your fellow Jews. Can you stop? But these are things that aren't pointed out to us. And then Are you familiar with Nordhausen, what happened at Nordhausen camp with all the bodies that they used, the bulldozers and the pits? Are you aware of what was going on there?
Well, I know a lot of these images of mass bodies and bulldozers. If you look closely, I've seen this numerous times. You see that these are Soviets. You could tell by the cut of their hat and even their boots. So there's some films that got out there of Soviets doing this. Maybe they're probably dead Germans and passing it off as Russians. That's what they tried to do at Caton Forest, by the way, in Poland.
It's even more interesting than that, okay? Because if you look at those pictures at Nordhausen, you'll notice that the buildings, the barracks they were kept in, were bombed, okay? And that camp was bombed by the British and the Americans like a day or whatever before, and it was a camp for sick inmates. They were caring for them there. And when they were done bombing it, then they strafed everybody, okay?
That's
so
right.
All those bodies were victims of British and American, you know, Air Force, all right?
Right.
And
that,
so
that,
when they came in...
Yeah,
we screwed up. We bombed all these people. You know, most of them were not even Jewish. And there's a film of them carrying one of these victims off and he's beheaded. And then there's an interview of a Jewish doctor that was in that camp. And he talks about how, you know, the bombing, it blew people's heads off. Their entrails were coming out. And he talks at length about how horrible that bombing and strafing was, and that's where all the bodies came from. But, you know, they did their old trick of, we screwed up here, let's blame it on the Germans.
Yeah.
So Winterwatch has an excellent...
They killed quite a few German Jewish inmates throughout the war, mainly on some of the transport ships, as the Germans were evacuating from the east. Because the Soviets were advancing, the policy of the Allies, particularly the Soviets, they would just sink these refugee ships. And,
I
think it was the Wilhelm Gulf. I mean, we're talking many times the Titanic.
Oh yeah,
was a casualty. The Wilhelm Gulf was 10,000, but a lot of these were
10,000. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the irony. Yeah. The Germans didn't kill any Jews.
Totally
a lot
opposite
of them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, think about it. Hitler's niece dated a Jew. I mean, what's more obvious? But, you know, you're never going to find that out. So I could talk to you for hours on this stuff. So,
Well, that's
anyway.
Great. Appreciate
your comments. Then one other thing real quick. Did you read Ingrid Zundel, you know, Ernst Zundel's wife, when she, you know, they kept saying, her poor Jewish doctor in the town, he was hauled off to the camp. She went to Israel and ran into him on the streets, her doctor from before the war. And she went to Nuremberg and went through the records on everything. And for Kristallnacht, she found where, you know, the Jewish lawyers had scribbled things out that was the truth, how Hitler and the Gauleiter for that region bordering France were wondering why all these people were coming over from France. It turns out that it was, and you can still find that on Veterans Today. I found it recently. It was a Zionist organization called the Leica that came across the border into Germany, and they were the ones that did Kristallnacht. Okay.
Oh,
so
of course,
it was
of
the,
course.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's so typical. It's
well,
just,
you ask
just
yourself,
like them. They do it all through history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the
so anyway, you can
see of Kristallnacht were the Jews were the beneficiaries. And for Hitler, it was an embarrassment.
Well, and then,
and he was livid when he heard the news of the rioting. He wasn't know what the hell's going on here. Because he knew what the Western press was going to do with this, you know?
Yeah, so, exactly. And then
Kristallnacht
was
an inside job.
Yep. And then all those lawyers, there were 3,200 lawyers for the Auschwitz trials, 2,400 of them were Jews, and a lot of those were refugees from when Hitler came to power, because what those camps were full of were criminal Freemasons. There were a lot of Freemasons in those camps, and you can you can read Bernard Fay, F-A-Y, who went around France and looked through the Freemasons' records at their lodges, and they were rounding up Freemasons for their criminal activity. That's why they had so many camps. It'd be like today, if we got to round up all of our criminals, every FEMA camp would be full. But, you know, he said, hell with it, I'm going to do it. And he certainly made Germany a better place. But that's what was in those camps. But they're not going to tell you that. So anyway.
Very, very good. I'm glad we have a second caller. We have Bruce from Texas. Join the conversation, Bruce.
Yes. Hello, guys. And I want to try to add some information. Maybe y'all are aware of it, or if not, then please look it up. But this is something I'm sure that Mike King is familiar with. Adolf Ox, the person who purchased the New York Times, the son of a Jewish merchant or some kind of an entrepreneur. And he took over at the start of the 20th century, basically at the turn of the century. And I think he was instrumental with World War One and World War Two black propaganda. Actually, he started off. They got this technique by demonizing the Apache as the final remnants of the Native American lands were being taken over, because they would have big sensationalist articles about the settlers are being slaughtered and all this stuff. It's black propaganda is instigated, so the railroads could take over the Southwest during the gold and silver rush. And so you had the Balfour Declaration there in England, and the agreement was, the Jews would get Palestine if they could get the United States into the war. And so that's where the World War One, the New York Times had published articles about, Belgian babies being stabbed by the Huns and all this stuff. Yeah. And then you had the Lusitania, and it continued on. That's where the New York Times really became a weapon. But have either one of you heard of Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, a historian?
No.
No?
No.
Ask Giuseppe about him. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it was 1896 when Adolf Ox purchased the New York Times. He got it for a song, because there was a big financial crash in 1893, which was triggered by his fellow tribesmen, by the way. All these crashes are. And that really devastated the Times and their advertising revenue. So he bought it on the cheap in 1896. And they began their manipulation towards globalism and Zionism. It passed to his son-in-law, who was a Sulzberger, who married his daughter. And then it went to his son, to his son, to his son, to his son. So it's the Ox Sulzberger family now for 125 years. See, one family controlling the paper of record and distorting the country's and the world's really perception of every major event of the past 125 years. So that is a criminal family. This has got nothing to do with free press. These people have controlled the Times for the specific purpose of manipulating current events, which turns into fake history. And it's
good stuff.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And Rockefeller said that we wouldn't be as far along in our New World Order taking over the United States, which he hated. He's even got that in his book on, I think, page 211, without the New York Times, without them being on board with all the evil crap they were doing. They couldn't have done it without the Times. So
that's right. And I think he also mentioned the Washington Post, which is a similar story, because you had the Great Depression crash, And in comes Eugene Meyer, who was head of the Federal Reserve Bank. He buys that on the cheap. The paper's losing money. So they captured the most two important newspapers. The Sulzbergers got the New York Times, and Meyer got the Washington Post following financial crashes. And, you know, you got those two. And then he passed it on to his daughter, Catherine Meyer. She's Meyer Graham, Catherine Graham. So that newspaper was like for 60 years in that family. ABC was Goldenson. NBC was Sarnoff. CBS was Paley. This is going back 50 years, back when they were only radio stations. So they had it all. And that's really the big story of the century. ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times, Washington Post. And then you have a bunch of lesser ones. But if you get the big boys, then what happens is all the small town local papers and local channels, they follow their lead. Inadvertently, innocently perhaps, but they follow their lead. And the poison spreads that way across the country. So, you know, it's not by accident that they went after the press like this. And it's the same in Europe. Yeah.
Edwin Bernays wrote Propaganda and Crystallizing Public Opinion. You put those two together with the newspapers, and there you have it. But before I get cut off or what have you, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, he's a very intelligent person. He's a historian, and I listened to a one-hour lecture of his back in 2012, and it was about Khazaria, and he ran through the history of the Khazarians. They were defeated maybe in the 200 BC thereabouts by Russian, you know, invaders, basically horse invaders. They had a huge war for about 80 years. They lost. They retreated to the Caucasus Mountains. And there, upon the commandment of the king of Khazaria, they converted to Judaism, because Judaism allows the trafficking of slaves. Yeah. And that's where they honed their language skills and their merchant skills. But they've always had a blood hatred for Russians, even before they hated the Germans.
Yeah.
And that seems true when everything is seen in mainstream media.
Yep.
They hold these grudges and they don't let go of them. And even if all the people involved, all the Jews involved, are not, you know, acutely aware of the historical precedent that brings this about, they follow the lead. And so when they took over.
Yeah. No, I was just saying they're raised on persecution propaganda. It's almost like an ethnic paranoia. So you have even the ones who aren't necessarily, you know, Marxist conspirators who are out to get us, they still believe that everybody's out to get them. So they have to be vigilant. And the moment they hear something that's not quite right, they'll come after you. So they scan their own people.
I want to go on record.
Yeah.
Mostly of all when they turn against them. But I just want to go on record. I don't believe Jews are born out of the womb, like maybe Paul in California suggested, you know, with these criminal intents and all this. I believe it's a learned, it's kind of like an Italian mafia, but, you know, with religious overtones. They do have their skills that they inherited over the centuries. But, you know, the mindset itself is Judaism. It's the ideology, and it's the society that creates this situation. All right, thank you.
They have a hive mind. I'm very much aware of how they are because I go to this coffee shop in the morning and it's predominantly Jews in there. And there'd be a woman that would come in who was Jewish and she'd be all nice and sweet, always eating her grapefruit every morning. They were all nice and sweet until one day I went in there and there's a postmaster inspector that comes in and he wanted to know about the Khazars. And I told them about the Khazars, and boy, did they erupt, okay? And then I told them about the Talmud, okay? And all these nice, friendly Jews that, you know, for years, they, how are you? How's your dog? And the one with the grapefruit, I could tell was their leader, because suddenly she came up and got in my face and got really belligerent, okay? And yeah. All the other Jews shut up while she was talking, and I said, oh, so this is their leader. And she starts feeding me this bullshit to try and get me off of what I was talking about. And it didn't even make sense to me. And what it was basically was the person that gave me this information was full of it. And I said, well, he was a professor of history from the Ukraine. He's Ukrainian. So I think he knows what he's talking about. Well, that wasn't true, but they lie. So I said, I'll just lie back. So that's what I told her. And then that shut him up. And then after that, they were always cool around me. They wouldn't have any, I no longer got, oh, how's your dog and this and that. They kind of feared me because I knew what the hell was going on. And I knew who their leader was. So it was kind of, it was an eye-opening experience for me.
Reminds me of that movie with Roddy Piper, They Live. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
Yep.
Hey, and speaking what's of funny movies,
speaking of movies, and y'all remember The Three Amigos with Steve Martin and Chevy Chase? Yeah. At the very start, there are three actors, and they go into Harry Flugelman, the studio owner's office, demanding more money. Flugelman, he's actually Jewish in the movie, and he says, it'll be a cold day in hell when I let an actor tell me what to do. You're blackballed, you're finished, you're fired, you're never working this town again. And that just perfectly illustrates the Jewish media, and it continues today, with the blacklisting and the deplatforming. I thought that was really cute how they slipped that in there. Maybe most people won't notice I did.
Monica Schaefer, who was in jail, and she's Canadian, was in the German jail for doubting the Holocaust. She said when she got back from jail, went back to Canada, in her small town, suddenly there were all these people that just were horrible to her, blackballed her, and they were, of course, we know what tribe they were from, and she had no idea. She said, man, I knew these people for years, and all of a sudden, I'm just persona non grata. And it was just, so it goes the same. They have a hive mind. They work together, and I think it comes through their egregore. They all worship the same egregore, and I think that hooks them up in this hive mind thing. So that's just my theory.
You can't include them all. You can't include every Jew, in my opinion. And just hear me out. Like Glenn Greenwald, he's on Rumble, and he interviewed the owner of Rumble last night. And Rumble is like the only major media, streaming platform that you can put stuff on, such as maybe you, Jim, and other people. And Glenn Greenwald really goes after the neocons and the whole thing. And he doesn't, criticize the tribe itself, but he does everything but stand. And there's been other people through history, I believe, I just don't buy into including, like, all Jews are of the hive mind. I mean, they're intimidated in that. They're indoctrinated into that. But I don't believe they come out of the womb that way. That's just
540-352-445.
You always have exceptions.
Jim's still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I had a caller asking for the call-in number, so I don't know if we're going to be able to squeeze him in, but there are a couple of minutes left. Mike, what more would you like to add here?
Oh, well, there's so much, because what we talked about today ties into 100 other issues, and those issues tie into 100 other issues. It's just so big and vast, this big thing here. But, I would definitely like for your listeners to check out realhistorychan.com, and at the footer of every page, they can get a free report called How to Respond to an Anti-Conspiracy Theorist, and that also gets one on the mailing list. Much of my content is for free, but the books and the PDFs are available at a very good price. Even though all my books were banned from Amazon, the paperbacks are still available at realhistorychan.com. But you can also get the PDF versions. It comes out to like $1 each. So that's it. I mean, it's just a vast body of of knowledge, and I can never get around to covering everything, but I try to cover as much as I can, not just history, but the current events, economics and philosophy. I mean, this touches upon everything. It really is like the movie, The Matrix. Everything in our life is affected by this phenomenon of this New World Order crime syndicate. You know, it's everything. So,
well, I think
Mike,
you're
can I say
right,
one
Mike,
thing real quick?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mike, I know you think Genghis Khan is terrible. The fact that we've been through this, through history, oh, he's awful. He was actually the opposite of that. And if you look at the Great Wall of China, you'll see that the gates and the doors were the opposite direction of what they're saying. And I get a lot of stuff on Genghis Khan, and he was actually a good guy, you know. Even Stalin was a good guy. I know that's hard for people to believe, but yeah. If you go through the 36, 37, 38 Moscow show trials where these Bolsheviks are on trial and it starts out, you know, this is an agent of City of London and he's responsible for the Ukrainian Holocaust and he's going to be executed, whatever. You can't.
Well, I mean, I'm aware about, you know, this intramural battle between Stalin and the Trotskyite Bolsheviks.
Okay, well, good.
I equate that to like.
Are we still there, Mike? Are you still there?
I equate that to like a battle between competing mafia families. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean one was good or the other. So, you know, the fact that Stalin hated Trotsky doesn't make Stalin a good guy. In my book. As for Genghis Khan, you know, the stories of the horrors of the Mongols, they don't just come to us from our European ancestors. It's also Arabs, Persians, Indians, Chinese. I mean, all over the world, there's the very same accounts from unrelated, unconnected people of, you know, the Mongols would just come in and say, surrender or we kill everybody. You know, they destroyed libraries,
Mike,
killed countless
Mike,
people.
I can't thank you enough for being here, Mike. I'm just delighted to have you here. RealHistoryChan.com. Check it out. Look for Mike's book. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Thanks for the calls, Brian and Bruce.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their